Some states say cases of coronavirus reaching a tipping point. What do emergency officials see for the next 72 hours in the Lone Star State? We'll find out today on The Standard.
Texas Standard is a production of KUT Austin, KERA North Texas, Houston Public Media, and Texas Public Radio in San Antonio, with support from Rand Group, software delivered as promised. No surprises.
I'm David Brown. Our conversation with the chief of the Texas Division of Emergency Management. Also, real life goes online across much of the Lone Star State. How well is teleconferencing keeping us connected? Also, schools in rural Texas struggling to put together next steps in places without lots of internet access. Plus, love in the time of coronavirus. All those stories and a whole lot more are just ahead. The Texas Standard gets started right after this. No matter where you are, it's Texas Standard Time on this 19th day of March, 2020. I'm David Brown in the Texas capital city. Hope you and yours are holding out okay, as you'll hear over the course of the next hour. We're trying to address your questions about life in the Lone Star State during this extraordinary period in our lives. Now, if you have questions, we're going to try to find some answers. Tweet us at Texas Standard or look for us on Facebook. Social media editor Wells Dunbar is looking for you, and he'll be joining us in a few minutes with the Talk of Texas. If we weren't focused on the spread of a certain virus right now, there's little doubt what our top story would be, and it's worth mentioning right here because it's hard to imagine the effects will not be devastating for many Texans, especially in the Southeast and the far West. The price of West Texas crude has fallen to a level not seen in almost 20 years, far lower than the last oil bust, which at that time was considered the biggest drop in a generation. And even worse, there's no sign of prices bottoming out. One expert is warning that supply could so overwhelm global demand that the price at last check around $20 a barrel could fall below zero into negative territory. Because of the long-term implications, this is a story we continue to track here at The Standard. Now, for many Texans, we realize the more immediate threats are coming from shutdowns in small businesses across the state and the insistence by officials to maintain social distance. All of this driven by the latest data on the spread of the coronavirus and the best known options for trying to stem the spread. Let's find out where we stand. Nim Kidd is the chief of the Texas Division of Emergency Management. Chief Kidd, welcome to the Texas Standard.
Thank you, David, and thank you to your listeners out there.
Well, I know that the numbers keep changing really by the hour, but what exactly is the protocol for the state's emergency response to a pandemic of this nature?
You know, David, while the virus may be novel or new, and pandemic is a word that we really haven't used here in a very long time, the policies, the procedures, and the people that we respond to all natural disasters in Texas are really the same. Those really don't change. They're part of the National Incident Management System. We work in conjunction with our federal partners always to support our local governments.
Now, I know that the governor had called out the National Guard a couple of days ago. I was thinking about the consideration that you have there where you have people on the front lines trying to assist. They, too, could be exposed in a situation like this, the same way doctors can be exposed in a situation like this. What are the risks there where you're trying to deal with a pandemic and yet you're exposing your frontline workers to it?
Well, I think first we have to stop for a moment and thank all of the first responders out there, police and fire and EMS, who are still handling everyday emergencies that go on all across this state, you know, including some of the tornadoes that touched down last night up in the very North Texas area. So our regular business is still ongoing. With the threat of the spread of this virus, I think it puts an additional risk on those first responders. And so I really hope that all your listeners, when they see a first responder, they'll thank them and keep them in their thoughts and prayers.
The governor has said he wants to leave it up to local counties and city governments to implement social distancing protocols and group gathering limits, not have a statewide mandatory quarantine or something like that. We've seen decisions to close bars and limit restaurant services. But from an emergency management perspective, Chief, do you believe that these programs should be implemented statewide?
So the far majority of our populated areas across this state have already had their mayors or their judges declare a local disaster declaration. But as we see now, this isn't just a local issue. This isn't just a state issue. It's not just a national issue. It's a global issue. We've seen the president and the CDC make recommendations to slow the spread of this. We've seen a lot of our cities and counties take this up. We've seen a lot of our cities and counties that haven't taken this up. And so I know as fast moving as the decision making is, because the virus is fast moving as well, I think the message that we need to get out to all of your listeners and all of our citizens is please pay attention to all of your local public health authorities and your elected leaders. They are working together harder than I've ever seen them work, and in more unison than I've ever seen in my almost 20 years in this business.
So, Chief, as you look out over the horizon and you think about, okay, the next 24, 48, 72 hours, here's what we face. Here's what we're looking at. What is the picture that's forming in your head right now of what we face here in Texas?
Well, I think families need to make sure that they're prepared. And we want them to be prepared, not panicked. The panic buying's got to stop. I mean, the supply chain is for groceries and for fuel is strong. What we've seen happening in some of our grocery stores is people making runs on commodities that they're afraid will go away. And I've talked to a lot of our industry leaders. I've visited their warehouses. Their warehouses are full. What's causing the problem is the panic buying, and we need people to slow that down. The next thing we need our community to do is to make sure that they're listening to instruction. And finally, I think the third piece that I want to get out is we have other disasters and emergencies that face our state, not just this coronavirus right now. I mean, we had several tornadoes in the North Texas counties, touched down last night. We had several homes damaged. We had a few injuries. So regular 911 calls and service will still go on. Now is a great time for everybody to make sure that they have a family communication plan, that they know where each other are going to be, and make sure that they're paying attention to the real media, not just the social media pundits that are out there on all of the social media platforms, but like you, the real media out there that are getting the official answers from the government officials and appointed officials and sharing that in the most honest manner that they can.
Nim Kidd is chief of the Texas Division of Emergency Management. He's overseeing the state's emergency response to COVID-19. Chief Kidd, I know you have a lot on your plate. Thank you so much for spending a few minutes with us on the Texas Standard. We appreciate it.
Thank you, David. Y'all have a great day.
The unemployment rate for Texas and the nation has been at historic lows of late. It is safe to say that stands to change dramatically the longer businesses remain closed over coronavirus concerns. And let's just cut to the chase here. There is the distinct prospect that a lot of people in Texas, and for that matter nationwide, will be filing for unemployment benefits for the first time in the not-too-distant future, and that they won't know where to begin. Well, here to help walk us through this process is Cisco Gomez. He's with the Texas Workforce Commission. Cisco, welcome to Texas Standard.
Hey, thanks for having me.
First off, is the Workforce Commission starting to see an increase in filings for unemployment benefits already, or are you just sort of bracing for a coming wave?
We have seen an increase. I don't have those exact numbers, but I can tell you from this year to last year. Last year, we had about a little over 11,500 unemployment claims, and last week at that same time, we had 16,000.
Wow.
So it's definitely gone up.
So for the person who finds themselves unemployed, what's the first step?
Well, the first step would be to go online. If they have an internet connection, they can go to ui.texasworkforce.org. It's 24/7. It takes about 7 minutes or so, just several questions. The only thing they're going to need is their social security number, their home address. And if they qualify and they do receive benefits, then they might want to have a account number for like a direct deposit. Otherwise, a debit card would be mailed out to them.
I noticed I went to that website and you have special information for COVID-19 employers and job seekers. What are you trying to do with that special information?
Well, we just want to keep everyone informed, and we're updating the information as we get it and as things might be changing. But we just want to make sure everybody understands and has all the information that they're looking for.
All right. So who can and cannot actually file for unemployment?
I mean, that's looked at on a case-by-case basis. If you are not working at this time, you should go to the website and apply. If you've been affected by the virus, by the impact of the coronavirus, then you should apply.
Now, do you need something like a pay stub to prove that you were unemployed, or what documents do you actually need if you want to try to proceed here?
So the only thing you're going to need is your social security number and your home address. Your information is most likely going to be in our system already, that we understand that you have been working, you have worked. So you don't need a pay stub. You just need that information.
Cisco, when it comes to claiming unemployment, is there a way to know how much you might be able to actually get and how long those benefits might last?
So how long and how much you're going to get will depend on person to person. There is a calculator on the Texas Workforce Commission's website. Mm. I think the max is 26 weeks, but that may change depending on, I guess, what might happen on the federal level.
So you need to go and check out that calculator over at the Texas Workforce Commission's website. We've been hearing from some listeners who are telling us that they haven't been fired or actually laid off from their work. They're just not getting any hours. They're sort of zeroed out. And so can they claim unemployment benefits or no?
So if they have reduced hours or no hours, we're asking them to apply for unemployment. It's, if they're impacted by this, we encourage them to do that.
Is the state ready to handle an avalanche of unemployment claims like this? It occurs to me that you're going to need people just to process many of these applications, much less, you know, pay out all the compensation.
So the Texas Workforce Commission has over 1,000 staff help supporting unemployment insurance services. So we're ready. You know, we're ready for this, and we're doing our best to help everyone at this time.
We're going to have a link to some of those resources that Cisco Gomez was telling us about. He's the spokesman for the Texas Workforce Commission. Cisco, thanks so much for taking a few minutes out to talk with us on the Texas Standard.
Thank you.
Yeah, that link's going to be up over at texasstandard.org. Wells Dunbar is our social media editor. What are you seeing out there, Wells?
Hi, David. Well, as we were just hearing, many Texans are out of work or have seen their hours dramatically cut, and several others falling into a sort of gray area. On our Facebook page, Beatrice Vera writes, "My employer said I could stay home if I didn't feel comfortable going into the office, just not to expect to get paid." She adds that she's 70 years old and has the capacity to work from home if given the opportunity, but her employer isn't offering. And Ann Sandstone says she's a retired public school teacher, but substitute teaches 3 to 5 days a week to help save money for property taxes. No school means no substitute work. And new business news expected today. Governor Greg Abbott expected to make an announcement concerning bars and restaurants across Texas after many cities have shuttered their dining rooms. We'll be back with reaction to that story and more later in the show.
Yeah, we would love to know how things are unfolding in your part of Texas. You know what to do. Just look for Texas Standard on your social media platform of choice. Wells Dunbar is going to be joining us once again in about 35 minutes or so with more of your comments and thoughts. So keep them coming. The Standard continues coming up on 19 minutes past.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Galveston Island, honoring North American birds lost to extinction with the opening of the Lost Bird Project exhibition and the unveiling of the Eskimo Curlew Memorial Sculpture on March 29th. Galveston.com/lostbird.
You're listening to the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. You've heard the CDC's advice adopted by many cities, no more than 10 to a gathering. As you might imagine, this can have a rather outsized impact on those who've been planning to tie the knot. Texas Public Radio's Paul Flav wanted to find out how couples are coping.
Tu Nguyen and Alan Gross stopped at the county courthouse in San Antonio Monday to pick up their marriage license. I caught up with them right after, and given the current pandemic, stood as far away as my microphone would allow. They did get the license, but the moment wasn't a festive one.
I admittedly almost cried when we got our marriage license because I don't know whether or not it's going to happen.
Tu's mother lives in Houston, where they're to marry in 2 weeks in a Catholic ceremony. At each mass, her mother's monitoring how the church will handle the situation.
I talked to my mom last night, and she texted me this morning.
Most of their family would need to fly in, and many are elderly. And Alan says they've already had 20 cancellations.
To be safe, we know we have a lot of people traveling that have to get on a plane, and you know, our elderly relatives too. So it's really about safety.
They had been planning for a year, but in the end, the decision was made for them. A few hours after the interview, the county barred gatherings larger than 10 people.
How are y'all? I'm so tired.
Yeah.
Jessica Elizarez and TJ Skrotsky video conference with their wedding planner, Jordan Maney, about next steps after they postponed their wedding.
Do you still want to keep that within 2020?
I mean, it's hard because we don't know how long this is going to last.
Exactly.
So yeah. We can say May, and if by April it doesn't look any better, we're still in the same boat.
The couple may still lose deposits because of the reschedule, but Maney says vendors are being flexible. There's insurance, venue, florists, caterers, and many other details to iron out.
It feels like somebody pulled a rug. When we got the CDC, like, the tweet that said the CDC was limiting, it was just like, we can't do this.
And to keep it in 2020, they may need to book on an off day like Thursday or Friday. They aren't crazy about this, but in the end, they just want to be married.
Bye.
That is a lot.
I'm glad we have a planner, though.
Can you imagine trying to call all the vendors by yourself?
Oh my god, yeah.
In tears? No.
Cellist Christina Trangone is warming up for practice. She's one of many who depend in part on weddings for her livelihood. She books musicians and performs at around 200 weddings a year. If this persists, it'll hurt.
Well, that can definitely be several hundreds of dollars lost. It's definitely troublesome because, you know, that's money that we use for paying bills, of course.
Americans spent $54 billion on more than 2 million weddings last year. But for many couples, it's about way more than just the money. I'm Paul Flav in San Antonio.
Support for coverage of business comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping companies protect their drivers on the road. More at worksafetexas.com/onthejob.
And you are listening to the Texas Standard. We've already seen massive changes to education in Texas because of the coronavirus. Just this week, Governor Greg Abbott canceled this year's START tests, and that certainly takes a big item off the to-do list of school administrators and teachers. But there's still much to figure out when it comes to teaching amid a pandemic. That's especially true in rural Texas. To tell us more, we bring in the Texas Standard's Michael Marks here. He spent time the past few days talking with superintendents of rural districts around the state. Hey there, Michael.
Hey, David.
What are you hearing as far as how rural districts are dealing with this situation? Is it any different for them than it might be for urban districts?
The short answer is yes. The more complicated answer is every district is dealing with this a little bit differently. Plans are, frankly, still in flux. The phrase that kept coming up is they're trying to build the airplane while it's flying. Mm-hmm. Most of the superintendents I spoke to at least extended spring break by a week. That's partly to help with social distancing, partly to give teachers, administrators time to prepare for really a new reality, because a lot of these districts are going to either go to a completely remote teaching model for the foreseeable future, or at least allow students whose parents wish to hold them physically out of school to do so. For rural districts, that's really challenging because of staff size. This is what Jay Backus told me about that. He's the superintendent of Anson ISD outside Abilene.
If you're in a big district, you have a math specialist, you have a reading specialist, you have all these specialists, assistant superintendents in charge of curriculum, things like that. That we don't have. So we just don't have the people that a larger district does. We don't have the resources.
But if districts are moving to a remote learning model, you're going to have adequate internet service, right? I mean, what's happening next?
So remote teaching is definitely going to be in the works. The big challenge, the biggest challenge for some places is going to be internet access.
Yeah.
One of the superintendents I spoke to, though, was really concerned about this was Kathy May. She's the head of McLeod ISD. That's located near the Texas-Louisiana border. Here's what she had to say about internet access in her community.
Internet access is our biggest mountain right now. I don't have internet access in my home. I can plug into my phone as a hotspot, but there are no options for me where I live, and that's the case for many of my students. No options available, and then affordability also.
So that means that districts like McLeod are going to try and use tools like Zoom or Google Classroom or Khan Academy, but there's going to be a lot of paper packets sent home, and they're going to be leaning quite a bit on parents to support instruction. You know, assessments, things like that are going to be extremely difficult.
Now, I know for some students, the meals they get served at school could be the only meals they get in a day sometimes. How has the coronavirus disrupted that or affected that for people in rural Texas?
So the Texas Department of Agriculture administers that school lunch program, and it's given the go-ahead to schools so that they can keep giving out free or reduced-cost breakfast and lunch to the students who need them. The big problem is getting those meals to the kids. That's really exacerbated in a rural area where it might take half an hour, 45 minutes to drive to the school.
Right.
And that's if a parent is available to do so, they can afford to do so. Superintendent May in McLeod, she told me yesterday that they only had 11 kids come get meals. That's way lower than the normal amount. She's working with the agriculture department to get some support to set up a Meals on Wheels kind of thing where, you know, a district representative could go directly to students' homes, deliver several meals at a time. That's still in the works, though.
Michael, we all know that state money flows to schools based in part on how many students are in school each day. And of course, what we're experiencing right now throws all that up into the air. If students are physically out of school for an extended period of time, how is that going to affect state funding?
Yeah, that was top of mind for several of the administrators I spoke to, because the important thing to remember is that when it comes to the economics of a lot of these small communities, you know, a lot of times the school district is the biggest employer in town. There is some good news on this front, though. The Texas Education Agency confirmed to me yesterday that even if a student isn't physically in school, as long as they're receiving instruction that day, that could be from home, that could be from the library, wherever, the district will still receive funding for that student that day. That's a big policy shift for them.
Texas Standard's own Michael Marks monitoring how these changes for educators and in education statewide are being felt out in rural Texas. Michael, thanks so much for the update. We appreciate it.
Thanks, David.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Raise Your Hand Texas, working to strengthen public education for all students. More information at raiseyourhandtexas.org. The future of Texas is in our public schools. Support for Texas Standard comes from Texas Oncology, with a reminder that March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. Screening can lead to early detection and is recommended for all men and women age 45 and older. More at texasoncology.com.
From the Texas Newsroom, I'm Joseph Leahy. Plunging oil prices due to the coronavirus pandemic are expected to take a toll on the Texas economy. West Texas Intermediate crude, the U.S.'s benchmark oil stock, is trading today under $23 per barrel. Permian Basin Petroleum Association President Ben Shepard says prolonged low prices will have the most immediate impact on thousands of oil industry workers.
Unfortunately, there will no doubt be some pain in the sense of layoffs and potential bankruptcies.
Shepard says if low prices persist, it will leave a big hole in the state's budget, which relies on billions of dollars from oil production taxes and royalties. The senior senator from Texas is facing criticism over his comments blaming China for the coronavirus outbreak. Speaking on a call with reporters Wednesday, Republican John Cornyn said the U.S. needs to rethink its relationship with China.
It's no coincidence that China has been the source of most of these contagions breaking out, SARS, MERS, the swine flu, because of some of the cultural practices there.
According to the CDC, swine flu, or H1N1, was first detected in the U.S. and MERS in Jordan. Both Democratic U.S. Senate candidates vying to challenge Cornyn criticized his comments. MJ Hagar said they were, quote, racist dog whistles, and Royce West described them as scapegoating. As people practice social distancing, more therapists are offering online sessions. KERA's Saida Hassan talked with a Dallas counselor who's helping clients remotely.
Rachel Tweed believes therapy doesn't have to happen in person to be effective. She's a counselor at the Dallas Healing House. From games to massage to yoga, the team of therapists uses a range of approaches with clients. As of Monday, they've made their practice completely remote. Tweed says they can still do things like practice yoga during video sessions.
We know that things are going to continue to look really different for the community. And so it's like, how can we adapt for the coming needs of our community, and how can we keep our services accessible, and how can we help incorporate those services into the lives of other people?
Tweed says the quiet time afforded by social distancing is opening some people up to the idea of therapy for the first time, and the Dallas Healing House continues to take on new clients. For those struggling to adjust to social distancing and working from home, Tweed recommends establishing a routine and taking time to unplug. I'm Saida Hassan in Dallas.
And I'm Joseph Leahy for the Texas Standard.
Support for these Texas headlines comes from the online UT High School, offering a full-time diploma program and individual courses for students from any school. Courses can be started anytime to catch up or get ahead. Learn more at highschool.utexas.edu.
33 minutes past the hour, Texas Standard Time. I'm David Brown. With gatherings of any size canceled for the duration, lots of folks, including the tech fans and entrepreneurs who had planned on being in Austin for South by Southwest this week, been finding ways to connect online. Sound familiar? These internet-only events range from web-based seminars to virtual brunch, in which participants actually cook on camera for those watching at home. Our tech expert Omar Gayaga has been keeping an eye on these online gatherings, as one would, and he's here to tell us about some of them. Hey there, Omar.
Hey, David. Hope you're staying safe and doing well.
Yeah, likewise. And hope you got enough bandwidth for all of this watching. You explored virtual events for an article in the Austin American-Statesman this week. I imagine you started looking at how people were dealing with the fact that South by Southwest was canceled.
Yes. I mean, me and many, many thousands of other people would have been at South by Southwest right now attending this week. So what's happening is, you know, with a lot of people staying home, doing work from home or for whatever reason, are still kind of desperate for that connection, or, you know, we still want to be talking to other people and making those business networking opportunities and kind of just having that human contact. So a lot of it is just going online. People are finding Facebook groups or doing virtual video chats. And the one that really stood out to me was this Austin serial entrepreneur Tony Aguilar started a virtual brunch on Sunday, and that morphed into a Facebook group for all kinds of events.
Wait a minute. A virtual brunch. What did you have for brunch?
I wasn't in the virtual brunch, but Tony, I had a group of about a dozen people, some from the U.S., some from Canada. And what I hear happened was it kind of turned into just a discussion of, you know, what's going on? What are you seeing out there? People sharing news and information and also, you know, their breakfast and, you know, their kids in the background. And that kind of led him to also create a group on Facebook just for people to post all kinds of events, music events, yoga, meditation, just all these things for people to be able to share, you know, each other's faces and to connect.
I think that's the dimension that has been missing from a lot of sort of online instruction. For example, you have someone who is coming through, say, I don't know, a Facebook page, and they've got a stream that's live, but you don't feel that interactivity. Now it seems like we have the bandwidth, we have the computer power, we have the cameras, we can do a whole lot more with the sort of the two-way, three-way, four-way, and I've seen, you know, nine people on one screen at once.
Yeah, I have a friend who has proposed, let's all do like 20-minute kind of quick lunch kind of meetings, you know, just these little quick one-on-one video chats where we can catch up with each other just to kind of like stay sane, where you can just kind of catch up with your friends and do kind of like a mini happy hour with people that you know. But then there's also the kind of performative aspect of like things to entertain kids that, you know, who are home from school. Mo Willems, the children's author, is doing a daily drawing, a kind of like doodle drawing for kids every day.
I heard about this. Yeah, coming out of Washington, I believe.
Yeah, so there's that. And then musical performances, too. So you're seeing a lot of artists and people who would normally be performing right now at South by Southwest kind of finding other ways to reach fans or just to entertain people who are kind of stuck and looking for things to do.
Are there good places to find some of these online events? I wish there were like a catalog you could search. I don't guess there's anything quite like that.
Yeah, I know the Statesman has put together a very comprehensive list of all of the musical performances that are happening online this week in lieu of live performances. There's also Eventbrite, which had all of sort of the events happening around South by Southwest. Now they have sort of converted a lot of those into virtual events, so you can still get on some of those RSVPs or find those streams. And just Facebook, you know, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, all of the places where you'd normally do social networking, people are posting a lot of updates about whatever they're doing. So if you have a favorite artist or musician, it wouldn't hurt to go to their Facebook page and see, you know, what are their listings? You know, what events do they have coming up that are probably donation events or virtual online performances.
You know, there have been a lot of talk over the years about, you know, the sort of the drift toward telecommuting and sort of taking these sort of online meetings seriously. I wonder if this doesn't represent a kind of tipping point for that. I mean, we're all going to be online and we're going to be meeting for some time online. Is this something that we're going to sort of get fatigued with, or do you think that this could be the new normal and something that we will embrace?
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about that this week, about just this is sort of the crucible for working from home, from telecommuting, for telemedicine, for things like do virtual chats and you know, online meetings really work and are able to take the place of face-to-face.
Yeah.
We're figuring that out, I think. Right now we're trying to figure out what is the limit of that and whether it can truly replace human-to-human contact. And I think people are struggling a bit with it and figuring out that, yeah, it's great in some ways and it's definitely important right now, but I don't know that I'd want to do this permanently.
Omar Gayaga, you can check him out over at techminutetexas.com. Omar, thanks so much for talking with us again, and we will see you next week.
Thank you very much, David.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Rand Group, partnering with small and mid-sized companies by helping to unify their businesses and achieve digital transformation. More at randgroup.com. Software delivered as promised. No surprises. Support for Texas Standard comes from the Texas College Savings Plan, administered by the state of Texas. Families can save for tuition, room and board, books, and other qualified education expenses at eligible schools nationwide. Learn more at texascollegesavings.com.
Hey, it's a Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. Oh, the places you'll go. Remember that one? The book by Dr. Seuss about finishing one thing and moving on to the next unexpected adventure? You have brains in your head. You have feet in your shoes. You can steer yourself any direction you choose. Well, in today's installment of our ongoing segment about Texans and their boots from heel to toe, you may recognize a similar journey.
My name is Matt Tomlinson, and I am an artist currently based out of San Antonio, Texas. And the artwork that I make is a direct reflection of who I am and the places I've been and everybody that I've talked to along the way. Well, like a true Texan, I've got several different pair of cowboy boots. But the ones that I think about when I think about my boots, I bought brand new in my hometown of Early, Texas when I was 19 years old. And I did a study abroad program with them on, and I wore them all throughout Europe, and I got to see a lot of things that I'd never thought that I would get to see. And then I came home and I swept warehouses, and that kind of seemed like a kind of a fun metaphor for a quote by T.S. Eliot that I really like. We shall not cease from exploration, but when the day comes that our exploring has ended, we will return home and know that place for the first time. During the summer of 2011, I took a job working at a gun range here in San Antonio, and I just saw my view about firearms kind of changing, and not necessarily becoming more black or white, but just becoming more complex and nuanced, and I wanted to reflect that in some of my artwork. And so I chose to take this kind of controversial medium, the shell casing, and develop that into an art form that some people can say is beautiful and other people can say the opposite about. So I take used pistol casings, I arrange them into what I call a brass canvas, and it forms one solid piece of brass, and then I paint over the top just like you would a normal linen canvas. You know, a lot of times the light that is shown on it and at different angles and from different perspectives, I think it takes on a different look and a different meaning. So it kind of can be two things at once, which is sort of where I want my artwork to be. I really enjoy doing murals. That's a way that I can kind of experience my artwork with more people than just me alone in a studio, and I can give that to somebody to look at every day if they want to. I've got a bunch of murals in a tiny West Texas town called Rankin, Texas. If anybody ever goes out there, the town has 600 people, and there's about 12 murals there right now that I've done. mundane and the exceptional things that I get to do in these boots, it imparts just a little bit of unique character with each different thing. And that's kind of the way I want my artwork to be viewed, is that you look at it and go, there's a lot of different stories being told just in that one image. And so I think about my boots that same way, where they've got scuffs and scars and paint drops and all kinds of stuff all over them. Everywhere I go, they pick up a little dirt from somewhere new, and each one of those tells a little bit about the person that's wearing them.
It's artist Matt Tumlinson from San Antonio, whose boots keep a detailed record of the places he's been. Check him out on our website, texasstandard.org. Hey, got a boot story of your own to share? Email us, texasstandard@kut.org. Well, a little earlier in the broadcast, we were looking at how rural school districts are trying to cope with the constraints of COVID-19. And across Texas, with many schools telling kids to stay home, parents are scrambling to deal with childcare, food, and ways to keep the youngins busy. KUT's Claire McInerney wanted to hear what some of the kids themselves make of this extended time on the home front.
There are still adults who are not taking the self-isolation stuff seriously. So let's let the kids explain why this is important. Here's Kaisa. She's six.
If we do not stay home, then we might actually have the coronavirus, and we could spread it. And we don't want to spread it, because that's not really being... that's mean.
And it's crystal clear to 9-year-old Ruby that she could be a carrier to others in her life. So she's laying low to protect them.
Well, I have two people that, like, that are, like, at risk, because, like, one of them is over 60, and that's really old because, like, their immune system isn't as good as our young immune system. And one of my family members has type 1 diabetes.
I mean, even 4-year-olds get the gravity of this situation. Here's Hattie.
Because the germs are getting at school and everywhere, so he have to stay home.
It's not easy for kids to be cooped up, though. But they have been staying busy. For 6-year-old Kaisa?
I've been playing, and I ate breakfast. I put my clothes on, and I was watching TV.
And 7-year-old Anderson has a whole list.
Play with my dog. Build Legos. And sometimes just rest.
They also have ideas for kids who are starting to get bored. Here's 6-year-old Daniela.
Jump on their bouncy horses if they have some, or play on the trampoline, or they can ride their bicycles, get ice cream.
Kaisa has an idea that's good for kids, but honestly, adults too.
Just pop up a new world in your brain. Even though you're not there, you can still be there in your imagination. So imaginations can help you if you feel bored.
Schools could be closed for longer than 3 weeks. Some people think it could be the whole semester. And 9-year-old Kate is already recognizing that this could be a slog.
It's already starting to get a little boring staying at home, so I can't imagine what it'll be like at the end of 3 weeks. So it's like one of the only times that I'm kind of gonna be excited to go to school.
And she's missing her usual social life, which, like, same.
The hardest part about being at home is probably that if I ever FaceTime my friends, I don't really have anything to talk about because nothing happens. The most I can say is I've just been chilling at home all day.
All of these kids have been under 10 years old, and it's been cute, but now it's time for some more mature voices. 12-year-old twins, Eddie and John, have some really comforting and wise advice.
It'll be over eventually, and that you should just keep going, pushing through, and it'll be okay in the end. Be nice to people, because it's like, I mean, they are kind of stuck with you, so you're just kind of being a jerk the entire time. Then I don't know, it's just not good for anybody, really. So just be a okay person.
So yeah, be an okay person to the Uber Eats driver, the CVS employee, the grocery store workers. During this tough time, we all deserve kindness. Oh yeah, and don't forget to
wash your feet.
Okay, Hattie's washing her feet. The rest of us should wash our hands. I'm Claire McInerney for the Texas Standard.
Be nice to people. Be an okay person. Pop up a new world in your brain. Some words of wisdom from young Texans to the rest of us on this Thursday. Hope you're hanging in there, folks. We've got more of The Standard coming up. Stay with us.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Texas CASA, advocating for a safe and positive future for all Texas children in the child protection system. Volunteer information at becomeacasa.org. Every child has a chance. It's you. Support for Texas Standard comes from TCU, where Horned Frogs strive to be responsible world citizens. More on how a trip to Norway challenged students' perspectives on mass incarceration and justice at tcu.edu/stories.
This is the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. Whatever sporting event you are most looking forward to this spring, canceled. Baseball, football, tennis, golf, for the time being, all done. Now, there are certainly more critical problems to solve when it comes to the consequences of the coronavirus, but nonetheless, for perhaps the first time ever, we appear to be living in a sportsless society, at least for now. Here to talk about what that means is Darren Roberts. He's the founding director of the Center for Sports Leadership and Innovation at the University of Texas at Austin. Darren, welcome back.
David, thank you for having me on.
Of course, there are no on-the-field results to talk about today. College sports canceled, nearly all professional sports canceled. I wonder if you've had some time to think about the cultural consequences of not having at least this particular diversion at a time when I think a lot of people would really like to be diverted.
Yes, you know, this is, we're in really uncertain and unique times, and I know that the people who are listening to the show, obviously they understand that with just the way that this pandemic has disrupted our daily lives. But as you mentioned, there is no sports outlet, right? So normally in times like this, we had some way to kind of vent our frustrations, and that's been through sports. But there's been such a complete stoppage. There's already talk that potentially the Tokyo Olympics will be canceled, postponed. So we're really living in unique times, and you know, I think everyone's hoping that we can move past this and hopefully resume, you know, normal lives.
I wonder if there aren't consequences to a sportless society that perhaps we aren't thinking about right now, or maybe some that aren't immediately evident.
Yeah, you know, aside from the economic impact, I mean, you just look at the NCAA, for example. So March Madness is the key driver of revenue for the NCAA. Their TV revenue, you know, is around the $1.1 billion mark. When you don't have a chance to host an event like that, you know, people look and they think about the bracket, but also think about all of the revenue that colleges and universities will lose that would normally come from the NCAA because they don't have it. You know, there's no without March Madness, you're losing a lot of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think we're going to see a trickle-down effect. I mean, the NCAA has also said that seniors whose seasons were disrupted will have an opportunity to have a fifth year of eligibility. So, you know, I really applaud all the efforts that the sports organizations are making in terms of the hard decisions. But we just won't know what this is going to look like, unfortunately, Dave, for a long time.
You know, Darren, I was thinking this morning as I was getting ready to come in, I was thinking just randomly, the image of Mark Cuban, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, and him becoming slack-jawed when he saw on his cell phone that the NBA season had been canceled. And I think that was a reaction of a lot of people. I mean, it just seemed astonishing. I wonder, however, when that news first started breaking, I wonder if that played a role in helping the general public take the public health threat more seriously.
You know, I think you have something. I think that oftentimes we see a response from leaders, whether they be in politics or sports. We get to see them once they've been briefed and have had an opportunity to kind of put a statement forward. What we saw from the reaction from Mark Cuban was as raw as it gets. And I also just want to applaud him and so many players around the league. You know, the Mavericks have set up a fund to help the hourly employees and the stadium employees and the arena employees. I think oftentimes we forget about the fact that, you know, for every sporting event, we have hourly and seasonal employees who are living from check to check. And so I applaud Mark Cuban and so many of the other players across the league for helping those employees kind of push through this tough time.
Darren Roberts is the founding director of the Center for Sports Leadership and Innovation at the University of Texas at Austin. Darren, thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us today, and stay safe.
Likewise.
And you were listening to the Texas Standard. Wells Dunbar is monitoring what you are talking about, dear listener. What are you seeing out there, Wells?
Hey, David. Well, as I mentioned earlier, Governor Greg Abbott slated to make an announcement about bar and restaurant operations mm-hmm. across Texas here in the wake of the coronavirus. And as many establishments across the state have already closed their dining rooms or begun to offer takeout orders only, this would potentially be the first overall state order the governor has previously deferred to local jurisdictions. So folks sounding off about that via Twitter, Tracy Gamble writes, "To this point, we've seen a game of chicken between the cities and the states. No one wants to be the bad guy, and thus electeds are allowing businesses to stay open because they want to serve the political or commercial good instead of a public health good." Speaking to the balancing act there. Mm-hmm. And on our Facebook page, Betty Wonderly writes, "It's past time to act together. I just hope it's not too late. There are no do-overs." And we are seeing, yeah, an increasing number of businesses curtail hours, just, you know, national chains, the Home Depot, to mention one, cutting its hours back. So obviously the main story continuing on social media, the coronavirus response. I'd say moving from the state to the federal level, another aspect of this we're watching is this talk about temporary cash payments for the government to help. Mm-hmm. I think the latest I've heard, Washington Post reporting the White House still wants to send American adults $1,000 and children $500.
$500. Wow, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, put that in the piggy bank within 3 weeks or so. Interesting comment here on our Facebook page from Josh Fredman. He's a proponent of a universal basic income, like that proposal we saw on the Democratic campaign trail from Andrew Yang. He says that the Republican direct payment ideas he's heard about are basically just a one-time or two-time cash payment that won't come close to meeting most people's needs. He notes that the economy is in meltdown. He feels it would be wonderful if a permanent UBI, universal basic income, came out of this, but that won't happen as long as Republicans control the Senate. Still, could be very helpful to many people out there. Obviously, we heard about the unemployment issues facing lots of Texans as earlier in the broadcast there.
Yeah, staggering rise in jobless claims this week. A lot of people talking about that and officials bracing for more in the weeks ahead, too.
Yeah. You know, that idea of help, of folks helping their neighbors, helping other people out, that's been one thing that we've tried to hit on somewhat here on the show. Another nice instance or example of that from a listener, Robert Flood. He recounts how his neighbors up the street delivered him a book he ordered that the postal worker sent to them by mistake. He notes that they had a fine time talking to them at a distance. And I have to say, just anecdotally, you know, I've been spending a fair amount of time with my neighbors here in the cul-de-sac from a respectful distance, mm-hmm. of course, but really putting that sort of sense of community first and foremost as we do all, you know, go forward in this event together.
Yep. We're all in this together. Interesting. I don't know if you've heard about this. General Motors and Elon Musk of Tesla both saying that they may dedicate space at their plants to building breathing machines, you know, ventilators, which may be in short supply, something that a lot of emergency officials are concerned about. One of many, many stories we continue to track here at the Texas Standard. But we're out of time for the big broadcast. News continues right here, so don't touch that dial. And we'll be back here tomorrow. Hope you'll join us then. Till then, I'm David Brown wishing you a terrific Thursday.
Philanthropic support for Texas Standard comes from Casey and Scott O'Hare, the Winkler Family Foundation, Lynn Dobson and Greg Waldridge, Adrian Killam, the George Huntington Family, and the Cynthia and George Mitchell Foundation.